All right, let's go.
All right.
Welcome, everybody, to Nothing to Fear, a casually released podcast all about horror movies. My name is Billy Schultz. I am your host, and I'm joined every single episode by Alex Wan and Luke Mason, and we talk about a different movie every time. This month, oh boy, it's a doozy, but we'll get into that later as I say hello to my wonderful friends. Luke Mason, it's been a month. How the hell are you?
I am well. Yes. Coming off a good trivia win last week, which I will... A bit of a, maybe a teaser for later. And a busy time. Middle of spring. This is the weekend in the middle of spring break. So kids all day last week, kids all day next week. But only four days next week.
What was the funnest trivia question from last week?
The funnest?
Ooh, what was the most fun?
Or like something that you would be like, I like that question. I'll use it for the future.
Oh, well, so there were the host actually asked two questions that I have asked in trivias I've hosted. So I enjoyed that particularly. So as of recording, last Sunday was St. Patrick's Day. And so there was an entire Irish category. Sure. And probably my favorite question was, what is the occupation of leprechauns? Do you know?
Oh, they're cobblers. They're cobblers.
Yeah, they make shoes. And I was the only person on my team who knew that, but also that is a question I've asked at trivia before.
Did you know that before, or did you learn that the way I learned that from the movie Leprechaun that we covered on this very show?
Yes.
What do cobblers actually do? Do they fix shoes, or make shoes, or shine shoes?
Yes to all. The whole thing.
Well, do they shine shoes?
They fix them?
They make them, fix them, and maybe shine them.
You ask them nice enough. Yeah. When they fix it, they're probably going to do a little like...
And what's the epimology? Yeah,
etymology.
Epimology. Cobbler, because like that just makes me think of like dessert, you know.
Well, you cobble together the weird pieces to make a shoe.
Yeah, I know that. That's like there's a phrase of cobbling something together by collecting and making it. So maybe there's something there.
Oh, okay.
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know
who.
The other one that I'd asked that. There was a movie category, and the question was, in the movie Schindler's List, it's all black and white except for the little girl's coat. What color is her coat?
Is it red?
It is red, isn't it?
Yeah, love that movie. One of my favorite. Top 10.
Real uplifting.
Yeah, it's a real laugh riot. Yeah.
Such a good watch.
Just so funny. Yeah, just so heartwarming.
I know we're recording like once a month now and like very sparingly, but I actually think it'd be really fun for like Luke to host a trivia night and us like just record it and put that out. I think that'd be so fun.
That would be
maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Have you watched anything other than this horror movie we're talking? Caught any movies? Any Oscar winners?
Yeah, I watched. I saw 8 of the 10 films nominated for Best Picture that Oppenheimer just recently won. I haven't seen Past Lives or Maestro yet, but I've seen all the other ones, and they're great.
Isn't Maestro just Oscar bait?
Yes.
Well, maybe. I'd say it's more like Oscar masturbate.
Because I read he spent like years like learning how to be a conductor, and I'm like, you're a fucking actor. Just wave that little wand around, you know?
So wave that little wand. That's what we call it. The little music wand.
Yeah.
yeah. Awesome. Well, it's always good to see you. And I hope your work doesn't get too crazy over the summer and late spring into summer.
No, it's well. I mean, there's
good to see you.
A lot of things are going well right now, so I'm excited.
Happy to hear it. All right. All over to you, Alex. We need two updates from you. First, how's your month? And second, the fans are dying to know, how are you liking the 20th season of Grey's Anatomy?
Which one should I answer first?
Did you make it before the premiere?
I did.
Oh,
I did.
Yeah.
Yep. I started October, I think 30th. And I was able to catch the premiere 2 weeks ago of season 20. And we're 2 episodes into season 20. And it's all right. It's not bad. Like season 19 and 20 were not bad. It was like 1 to 11, and then 12 to 18 was some hot garbage. But, you know, we made it to 20, and I'm liking it. Yeah. So that's where we are with that.
Love it.
Yeah. The last month. I feel like a lot's happened in the last month.
Yeah, I have a whole list for my part, so.
Yeah. So I went to Vancouver last month, and I flew with Lynx Airline, which is a Calgary-based airline that started 2 years ago that, like, does cheap flights. And then the Thursday, so I was flying out Saturday, come back Sunday. It was just a one-day trip. And the Thursday, they announced, as of Monday at midnight, we are ceasing operations. Yeah. Yeah, long story short, I got there, no problem. And then getting back, like, my flight was supposed to take off 8:30 Vancouver time and land back 11 p.m. Calgary time, and they were going to shut down by midnight.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, yeah, we're good. Like, no problem. Like,
hour to spare.
They didn't email me. They didn't email me to cancel my flight or anything, so we should be good. We get to the airport.
Wow.
At
real last days of Rome situation.
Yeah. We get to the airport, and 15 minutes before boarding, they're like, your flight has been delayed by 3 hours. And then, you know,
no,
everyone's, like, panicking, and, like I was a little stressed out, too, because, like, any other airline, if it's, like, delayed by 3 hours, whatever, it's delayed by 3 hours, I'll just wait. But, like, this particular one, it's delayed until after they said they're going to
be out of business,
stop operations, right?
And of course, they're just going to turn the plane off, whether it's in air or not.
Exactly.
Just be like, midnight, we're out.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Well, yeah, so we weren't going to take off till 11:30, which was 12:30 Calgary time, which is 30 minutes after, right? But, like, long story short, obviously, like, so what had happened is one of the crew members decided not to show up, you know. As you do
last
on
day of work.
Yeah,
what are you gonna do? Fire me?
Yeah, exactly. So they had to get someone from a different. They had to like get someone from a different airline that was flying in from Toronto, and that's why that flight our flight was delayed by 3 hours. And they were like, we could have flown with one less cabin member, but then that means 60 people would have been bumped off the flight because you know you need like a certain ratio of like crew members.
Oh, really?
That's what I learned. Yeah, you need a certain ratio of crew members to passengers.
That makes sense.
And then they're like, well, it's our, like, final flight ever. Like, I'm sure those 60 people would be so mad, which is fair. Yeah. So that's why it was delayed by three hours. Yeah.
60 people? Like, how many people go on a plane? Like, I feel like 60 has got to be the upper limit.
This was one of those big planes where it's, like, three on each side, three seats on each side. It's, like, a 747-something.
Okay. Probably not a 747.
At least you landed with all the doors on, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But then what was also cool is for the first time ever, I was at the front of the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Nerd sitting at the front of the bus.
Yeah, and then the plane landed and they're like, thanks for flying with us. It's been an honor serving Canadians for the past 2 years. This is our final flight ever. You know, I'm a little emotional. And then people fucking clapped. I'm like, nobody ever claps when I lose my job. What the fuck?
Hey, we drank a lot when you lost
your job. I can think of some people who probably clapped when you lost your job, Alex.
yes. But yeah, that was an interesting weekend. And then, you know, saw some old work people. So that was nice. People that you all know. Met Mary's baby. Very cute.
Very cute.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I shouldn't dox this baby.
Yeah.
And their address is here.
6969 Nice Street.
Oh, I gotta bleep that now, Luke.
And it's March Madness right now, so I've been watching a lot of college basketball.
March Madness.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Very good.
The women's tournament is gonna be fucking insane.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Does it happen at the same time or no?
It does, yeah. Like honestly, college basketball fucking sucks. Like it's not fun to watch, but the women's game is like a lot more fun to watch, and I've been very invested this year. Because they're terrible at basketball. It's like a turnover every two possessions. They're just bricking everything. Like, it's just not, like, quality basketball, you know?
Well, doesn't that make it more exciting?
No, what makes it exciting is the single elimination, right? When the underdog takes out, like, the favorite. That's what makes it exciting. But, like, the actual product itself, for the most part, is really, really shitty. Like, if you just like watching good quality play, I'm like, you're just...
Every sports junior... Or amateur is like that, right? We get accustomed to the extent where
the amount of people watching it are. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because college basketball is like fucking crazy.
It's crazy. It's huge. And like, yeah, it's exciting because of the single elimination. But I wouldn't, like obviously there's a couple exceptions. But for the most part, at least like the early games when like it's all the teams, some of these games are very, very low quality.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like. The women's tournament this year is something to watch out for, and I've been watching a lot of it
Is that because the players are better than they have been before, or they're just like...
Oh, there's some like incredible players. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Hell yeah.
I'm sure like maybe you haven't like know exactly who, but like Caitlin Clark
yeah.
is playing. Iowa
She's
yesterday.
On the sports news all the time.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, okay.
Cool. And then yeah, LSU.
I have a good friend who's driving down to Spokane today to watch two of the games because Spokane is hosting a bunch of the games for March Madness because that's like where Gonzaga is from.
Okay.
But it was funny. Gonzaga isn't playing in Spokane. They're playing in Salt Lake City. But their court is still hosting a bunch of games.
Amazing.
But yeah, it's been fun.
That's cool. I mean, it's well known on the podcast and in real life that I'm not a sports gay. I don't really care too much for sports, but
what?
Shocker. when I was in band in the Outriders, we used to play like pep band style for the University Dinos basketball games. And it was like it was like so much fun watching the games, even if it was just like, you know, university level. It wasn't like big scores or anything, but like a really close basketball game is like very, very tense and very enjoyable to watch.
Well, so, a lot of it is like school spirit as well, right? So
yeah. It's school spirit. And also they were like, when the other team has the ball, you can yell and scream as loud as you want and try to heckle them. And so like anytime they're doing free throws, we'd be like, boo, you suck. And it's like, we're all in our late 20s and 30s. And these people are like 19 and 20 years old. And we're just like tormenting them psychologically.
Boo, you suck. So, well, I have a question for you.
Boo, you suck.
You might not be a sports, but you like games. Do you prefer your games boring or funny?
I'm not answering that question until I do my check-in.
You could just edit that to after, maybe. Or I'll ask it again.
Okay, all right.
That's so much work. Just ask it again.
I'll just ask it again.
It's so much work. Oh, God. No, okay,
and people say we don't script our shows.
No, but great check-ins. My month has been kind of wild for the month of March. I got sick for a week and I didn't test positive for COVID, so I don't know what it was, but I lost my smell like completely for 10 days, which was very weird. Just like cooking and not smelling anything, or like, you know, my cats having a messy litter box and me being like, oh, nothing wrong here. It was just like very weird. And I got worried. I was like, I don't know, what if I never am able to smell again? And I Googled it and it's like, usually it'll come back, but there's like no medical intervention you can do if you lose your sense of smell. You just have to like practice. And so they're like, just practice. Smell really strong scents, like smell peanut butter, smell like perfumes,
ethanol?
Smell stuff that's very like strong. Yeah, like alcohol and stuff. And so I was just like, every morning I'd wake up and be like, all right, take a big whiff of peanut butter. Can I smell this today? Take a big whiff of vanilla extract. Can I smell this today? And like, it would like slowly come back in. It was just like, it's so weird. Like, there's no way to describe losing that sense of smell, just being like, wow, I no longer remember what things smell like or what they should be smelling like. It's very strange.
Well, I'm glad it's back.
It's back. Yeah. We're so back.
Now you can smell all sorts of shit. You can smell the shit that directors put in their movies now.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of movies, I've seen a couple movies now that I have more time. I saw almost all of Dune Part 2, which is very fun.
Well, it's almost all.
Were you late?
So I was... No, I wasn't late. I was... The funny story is I was late to the Dune Part 1 screening that I got the ticket a few years ago. So I missed like the first 20 minutes and then caught up when they were like arriving on Arrakis. And I was like, okay, cool. And this time...
Arrive Kiss.
I was watching the movie. I got there on time. Yeah, the Arrive Kiss. It's a... Yeah, yeah. I got there on time. I watched the whole like first two acts of the movie. And then it gets to the point where this is spoilers for Dune Part 2, if anyone cares.
Have you seen it?
Paul is like,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Paul is in the southern part of Arrakis. And he's like, guess what, bitches? I'm the guy. I'm your guy.
Lisa Nalgaib.
Yeah. Lisa Nalgaib. That's me. I'm going to tell the emperor. And he like, you know, writes his little letter to the emperor, seals it with his father's staff. And then it gets to, you know, Christopher Walken, just looking like regular Christopher Walken. And he opens the letter and then the screen turns off and all the lights turn back on. And the entire theater had like lost power except for the emergency lights. And they're just like, Well, here's a voucher for a free movie ticket. Come back later.
So you haven't seen the rest of it yet?
So bad.
I haven't seen the rest of it.
Oh my God.
I saw like 2 hours of Dune and I was like, I enjoyed it. It was wonderful to look at, but I am absolutely not going back into theaters to watch the same 2 hours of a movie. I'm gonna wait till it comes out on streaming. I'll catch up then.
Yeah.
I'd do it. That movie's fucking incredible. It's so good.
It was good. It was just like,
you can't form an opinion of it yet, Billy. You haven't finished it.
Yeah, fuck off, Billy.
I don't have an opinion. All right, listen to me. I'm gonna have a hot take, and I'm gonna have an opinion on a movie that I don't really know that well on the internet, and I don't care who knows it.
I think there's a lot of podcasts that is the case.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I wanted to give a little fun cultural connection for Dune Part Two, because the Emperor, played by Christopher Walken, is also, as you'll remember, the mainstay in that famous music video "Weapon of Choice" by Fatboy Slim.
Mm-hmm.
And I sure. like to think the casting maybe is intentional, because there's an entire verse of that song that is talking about sandworms. So there's a very overt reference to the novel Dune in that song that he is in the music video of, that he is now in the movie of.
And Denis Villeneuve, famously favorite music video of all time of his.
Weapon of Choice.
Yep.
My God, though, Dune Part 2 is so good.
I really agree, because I've seen it.
Yeah, me too. No.
The parts I watched were good. I liked the part where he was riding on the sandworm, and they were like, call a sandworm, and he's like, you got it. And then it's like, not that big of a sandworm, and he's like, I guess I'll just do it anyway.
Ah, Billy, you haven't seen the whole thing yet. You don't know, you don't have the right context to complete. So,
no, I really liked the like infrared kind of scene where they're on the Harkonnen homeworld and they're in
but
like,
do you know the context
arena.
Of it?
You didn't see the whole movie.
They really explain that in detail in the credits.
Oh, okay. I gotta see the credits. All right. I gotta save for the post credit sting, eh? All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what's up, Billy? I know you're busy, and I know sitting through 2 hours of the same thing as you've seen already is like a long app. Mm-hmm. But like, you need to fucking finish this movie because it's so good.
I'm going to. As soon as it's on streaming, I'm going to finish it.
You got a voucher.
Well, okay. If this makes you mad, then probably the next thing is going to make you even more mad.
No, I'm not mad. Just like, I'm sad on your behalf.
I think
I'm
disappointed.
Able to finish it.
I'm disappointed.
And that you're actively choosing not to finish it as soon as you can.
Maybe. No, don't convince me against my better judgment. But when I was sick, I like took a week off. I have been derelict in my schlocky action movie.
Who's Dara?
Watching. So I'll never tell. So I spent the time to watch all 4 of the John Wick movies, which I had seen.
So good.
So I finally have seen John Wick. I have a lot of questions about how the universe works, and the movie is very much like, we don't need to answer this. But those were very, very fun, silly, like fantasy, you know, action movies, which, you know, for what they were, very enjoyable. And like, good on you, Keanu Reeves, for carving out another like iconic character in pop culture. So I finally, and I like how in John Wick 4, the what's his name, the Harbinger, is played like Clancy Brown, who does the voice for Krabs on SpongeBob SquarePants. So I find that very funny.
What'd you think of the excessive stair scene? Boss.
The part where he gets up most of the stairs and then he falls down, and then he gets up the stairs again and he falls down again. I was like, oh God, I would just quit. I'd be like, sorry, Helen, my wife who I love, and you're dead. I quit. They win.
Isn't Clancy Brown also the commanding officer in Starship Troopers? I believe he is.
Oh, maybe he is. Yeah, he does a lot. He's a journeyman. But like, just hearing that voice and being like, I just imagined him pulling out like, John Wick, me boy. Watch out! The table's after you. So yeah, John Wick. What else did I do? By the time this episode comes out, I'll be fully done with school. So
Fully done.
Ready to graduate.
Nice.
And then, I also saw Poor Things. I watched Emma Stone do her role in Poor Things. That just made a big noise.
You got pots under there?
No, it's an empty coffee can full of change. So that was nice for the.
Yeah. I'm going to put the noisiest thing I can right under my desk and then kick it.
Flavor. Podcast flavor.
Don't worry. It was also on a metal garbage can that it fell into. So nice. Two loud things.
Clang, clang.
It was metal filled with metal falling into metal. So great. Yeah, Poor Things. I watched it because Emma Stone was up for the Oscar, and a critique of the Oscars was that they often award the acting awards to the person who does the most acting, and boy oh boy, did she do the most acting in that movie. Yeah. It was good though. I thought it was very trippy. Yeah. So that's my check-in.
Cool.
I'm going to watch some of Dune 2. You know what? I'm just going to watch GIFs of it I'll just get the rest of the story through like my GIF keyboard and see if I can piece it together.
You know, I'm sure eventually someone will upload Dune the 2. Rest of it to Twitter, because I think like someone uploaded all of Morbius on Twitter. And it's like, it's 8 pixels.
Yeah, well, Twitter is like a constant garbage fire now, so anything goes there. It's like Mad Max times on Twitter, but I don't go on Twitter anymore. But anyway, Luke, I think you had a question for me.
Yeah. So you're not a sports person, but you like games. Do you like your games mm-hmm. fun mm-hmm. or funny? Nah, shit. Boring or lame? Ah, shit. Do you like your games?
Don't worry.
Placid or eventful? I forget my question.
You just keep going. We'll edit all the wrong answers out, and we'll leave the clean one. No one will be able to tell.
Do you like your games phenomenal or epiphenomenal?
Epiphenomenal. What does flaccid mean?
No, placid. I know what flaccid means. What does placid mean?
Oh, placid.
Like
calm.
Like a lake, a still lake and calm. And
oh, because there's a real place called Lake Placid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because the lake's pretty calm.
It's a calm lake? Oh, okay.
Hence the irony of the title for the horror movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we're watching next month. No, we're not. Mm.
I don't think it's very
okay,
good.
So... No, let's do a trailer. I'm going to do the English movie trailer for this one. Spoiler alert. But we'll talk about the synopsis after this trailer. Here it is.
What is it, honey?
There's someone here.
Hello?
Sorry to disturb you. I'm staying next door.
Please, come in.
Wow, that's a really great set of clubs.
Mr. Farber.
What?
Ah! Dad!
You want to call someone? An ambulance? Or the police?
Why are you doing this?
Have a seat, please. I'm Paul. We're gonna make a bet now. You bet that you'll be alive tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and we bet that you'll be dead. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch the tiger by the toe. If he hollers, let him go. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Why don't you just kill us?
You shouldn't forget the importance of entertainment. I shouldn't have done that, Anne.
Please, keep me safe all through the night, please.
That's awesome, really. Really.
Alex Wong.
Okay. Were we supposed to watch the English one?
No.
I would like... No,
okay. Gotcha.
Oh, good.
Okay.
That means that I also watched the same version as you.
That's fair. Funny Games is a 1997 Austrian psychological horror film written and directed by Michael Haneke and starring Suzanne Lothar, Ulrich Meng, and Arno Fritsch. The plot involves two young men who hold a family hostage and torture them with sadistic games in their vacation home.
All right. So that answers my first question. Which version did you watch? Because I could only find the 1997 German version on YouTube. And even though it had the thumbnail for the 2007 remake, which I found out is a shot-for-shot remake. Like, it's literally the same movie, just in English and set in America. So, all right, this movie came out in 97. It had a budget of $5 million, and it didn't have any box office information for the 1997 release. But the remake was made for $15 million and only drew in $8 million, so kind of a flop. And Rotten Tomatoes gives 1997 Funny Games a 72%, and IMDb gives it a 7.5 out of 10, so people seem to be favorable about this movie. But we have Danae to thank for this, so they suggested that you pick this, Alex. So why don't you start us off with your initial thoughts of Funny Games?
Initial thoughts.
Maybe Danae should go first.
Danae? We'll get them on the line.
Okay, initial thoughts. So I think I understand this movie. It's just trying to be like a... I feel like it's trying to be like the anti-slasher. Like, it's a slasher, but trying to be an anti-slasher. Where, you know, like, your typical slasher movie is just, like, gratuitous gore and, like, many deaths and, like, just no real purpose. It's got all the tropes and all that stuff. And this one, like, it follows those kind of... It tries to, like, follow those tropes in, like, clever ways of, like, you know, breaking the fourth wall and, like, having one of the characters talk to the audience, be like...
Ferris Bueller style.
Yeah, like, this is supposed to be like how this movie is supposed to take place, and like, oh, you're supposed to root for these people or whatever. And but it also like flips it on its head, where it's like, yeah, we're not following any of these tropes, and it's not going to be like your typical slasher movie. So I get that, and I think it's supposed to be for people that complain about slasher movies and give them a different spin on, like, you know, maybe just how, you know, slasher movies is all about the gore and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But what I've learned is, which has reconfirmed my thoughts, is A, I don't like slasher movies, and B, okay, I don't like movies that commentate about slasher movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my initial thoughts on this movie. It's like, I get it, but I still don't like it.
Right.
You know?
Fair enough.
I just think, like...
I think it's a very hard movie for anyone to like as well.
Yeah. I don't think the point of the movie is to like it. It's trying to make a commentary on the genre itself, but it does like, but I just feel like it does so in a way where it's like tragedy porn at some points. I'm like, I get it. Let's move on. You know?
Yes.
So yeah, I did think the characters were very good and interesting.
Yeah.
But in terms of like overall plot and like the commentary on the genre, I'm like, wasn't a huge fan.
Fair enough. Luke, what did you think of Funny Games 1997?
Well, I guess there's two things to say in this movie's favor as background that make it fine, I suppose. I found this movie fairly underwhelming. The second half was so boring. The first half was okay. That there is a kind of tradition in cinema of the... what I guess you would call the educated overman who feels it's totally their right to just kill anyone they want because whatever. So there's a film, I think from 1940 by Hitchcock, called Rope. And it's the beginning of the movie is these two guys kill this third guy and like leave with a rope. They strangle him. And then he's in like a chest, like a big box in this room, and the vast majority of the movie takes place in that room. There's a dead person in this one chest, and they're like have a party in this room, and then they just go through all these conversations, and comes out that these two guys are followers of the Nietzschean philosophy of the overman that like can do whatever they want to. They have their they play in a different realm of morality than all the rest of the normal stupid people in the world. So, which I will put in as a total bastardization of the Nietzschean philosophy, but it and the reason that this is also pertinent is that there was a real life case in the 1930s of these two guys, Leopold and Loeb, who murdered a third person, and when they were caught, they said it was because they thought that they were better than them, and that the rest of laws and morality didn't apply to them because they were just so much smarter, and it was their right to to take life because of how stupid the average person is, and that they're just, they're like different creatures, basically. It's like, it's not really wrong to kill an animal, so most of humanity to us are animals because they're so stupid.
Right.
So, like, that through line is obviously apparent in this film. These two, the two killers are, like, hyper-educated, hyper-intellectual type of people with the 90s spin, the 90s top spin of being bored and ironic, which is very 90s, right? I mean, like, think Slackers or Reality Bites, like, that sort of ethos.
Very nihilistic, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, nihilistic, but not... still want, or American Psycho, you know, like this is a Gen X film through and through from
that
point of view, right? So that's like, I noticed that part of it. And then the other part is the, again, 90s observation on how television is really affecting people. As you say, Alex, there's, I counted at least four fourth wall breaks. There might have been more, but I counted four. Where the main,
oh, that many, yeah.
The main killer guy, the ringleader, looks at us and is like communicating directly to the audience, like, "Hey, this movie is made because you're watching it, and you're watching a movie of gratuitous violence against extremely innocent people. So your interest in this subject matter or content is funding this subject matter and content. So you are complicit in these murders." I think that's the idea, is that you, the audience's obsession with gratuitous violence, is creating more gratuitous violence, or at least contributing to it.
It's economics, right?
Yeah. So, like, all of that, I would say on that last point, I don't think that observation of media has aged very well, because television is not really the form of media people consume any ideas, good or bad, on anymore. Like, you know, a 2024 version of Funny Games would be about live streaming and social media apps. Mm-hmm. It would not be about, hey, you're watching this movie, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just think it's a kind of time capsule in that way of media observation. So those two things, on the one hand, of things I enjoyed, I thought this movie was very bland otherwise. You know, it was like, yeah, the acting was fine. There's one scene that's like 7 minutes long where nothing happens and it's just one camera shot. And I was like, what the fuck is happening in here? Like, I looked at my phone for 5 minutes. I looked back up. It's the same shot. And there's, anyway. And then
there's no sound. There's no music. There's a TV playing, like, yeah, background car racing noise or whatever.
And as far as a survival movie goes, I don't know. It's tragic, but those two adults did not do nearly enough to stay alive in the ample opportunity that they had to. So you never want to blame the victim, but these people just crawled into their own coffins, I felt.
I had a note during that scene, that very long, like you said, it's 7 minutes long of one shot. I said, I have it highlighted here. It says, Alex is probably fast forwarding through this sad living room scene.
No, actually, I watched it with a couple friends over Discord because I was like, oh, okay. I'm about to watch this. Anyone want to join? And then we were just talking the whole time over it. Like, what the fuck is happening? It's like one of my friends is like, I think your stream died. Like, is it paused or something? I'm like, no, it's playing. Yeah. Just nothing's happening.
The TV is still playing. We know that it's not stopped. Yeah.
So stupid.
Anyway. Yeah, I think like the message behind this movie is right on what you said, what they're trying to do. You know, Luke and Alex is like, yeah, we are murdering people and you're watching it for entertainment. So like, in a way, you're kind of just as bad as we are. And we're like, okay, but your actors and this isn't real. So no, like,
yeah.
But it also made me think of like, you know, the first Scream movie where it's like Billy and Stu are doing these murders because Billy wants to get revenge, but Stu is an impressionable, you know, burnout, you know, who's influenced by like a cult of personality type person to like make bad choices. And I kind of felt that dynamic between Peter and Paul or Tom and Jerry or Beavis and Butthead or Fatso and a guy who calls his friend Fatso all the time. Like
Fatty.
Right. Pardon me. But yeah, because this came out in 1997 and like, you know, the idea of people being psychopaths and murdering for no reason is not new, but it just made me think of like all the stuff that sort of come after it. Like there's The Strangers is very much in this line of, you know, dialogue, or that Mike Flanagan one with the, where Katie Siegel is a deaf woman. What's that one? Hush. Yeah. Hush was really good. There's like, Speak No Evil is another movie that is very much in these lines where it's like, we are going to like push these people and they're not going to like stand up for themselves and we can be evil because, you know, we don't care what people think. And it made me think of our conversation and even our last two movies, like Creep, like, you know, we saw this with Mark Duplass's character. He's like, he's going to do what he wants to do and he doesn't care about the consequences. So like, these two kids, I feel like, are part of like a psychopath family of characters who just think they're smarter and therefore better and can do what they want when they want because they'll prey on goodwill and then push people past that point. But any sort of little slight that the people do is like justification to them to like be more cruel, right? Like the movie starts with Paul, I think. Yeah, Paul asking for eggs. And they're obviously not genuine from the start. They've terrorized the neighbors the whole previous night. He asks for eggs and then he breaks those eggs. And when she doesn't want to give him more, it's like, oh, why are you being so mean to me? All I want are eggs. Like, I'm being reasonable. Can't you be reasonable? And then, you know, they get mad. And so later on, the husband slaps him because he's mad. And he's like, well, now I've got to break your leg because you made me do this. And actually, it's all your fault. And it's just like, okay, this, I get it. But they really beat that point over the head. This movie, by the way, we didn't do Does the Dog Die, but there is Death of a Child and Death of a Dog in this movie. So
a twofer.
It's a twofer.
Well, and
it's a bummer.
And
it's a bummer.
Adults, too.
Yeah.
But who cares if they die, right?
Yeah, I guess adults die too. That's fine. Yeah, adults die. Eggs get broken. No.
I would say one element of this I enjoyed is like that moment of like a social psychological experiment about like what's the point where you like manners have to stop and you have to start like realizing you're like maybe like the ambiguity of the situation. Like, are you just a neighbor who's asking for a thing but you're acting really strange? Well, are you acting strange because you're socially awkward, or are you acting strange because you have some sort of hidden agenda? And like, it's not straightforward for at least the first little bit with the fatty Tom guy, right? Like, you know, from the mom's perspective, he's just kind of like he could be just a sort of someone who's never been properly socialized. He's a weirdo, but
he was definitely homeschooled.
Maybe innocuous. Yeah, definitely homeschooled, but maybe innocuous. There's a, I don't have both of you seen the American remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
No.
Yes, once, a very long time ago.
Well, there's a scene in there similar where it's like, you know, one character says to another character, you came here suspicious of me and you still came in because you didn't want to offend. Isn't it strange that your desire to not offend was stronger than your desire of survival? You know, and it's just like that sort of interesting social makeup of the desire to not offend is so deeply ingrained in our cultures that people will even go further into their own potential demise than stick up earlier. Now it's like a little different in this particular context because it was her house and the guy came there, but like he was acting weird from the hop. And like, how long do you stay polite in a uncertain scenario? You know.
Well,
I thought that
it's really interesting you point that out, because earlier what you said about how this was maybe like kind of a, like a time capsule movie where, you know, like back then it would have been TV, but now it would have been live streaming. Mm-hmm. I feel like definitely back then, generally, it was like, yeah, like the need to not offend will outweigh the need for survival. But I feel like post-COVID, people are way more willing to offend than to survive. Or I'm like, to in order to survive. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like generalizing, but I just feel like, you know, the way people have been acting towards each other in the last few years, it's kind of flipped the other way around. You know?
Yeah, I think there's more, like, you know, people are quicker to trust their guts, too. When they're like, ooh, something's weird about this. I need to, like, get out of the situation. And it's like, obviously, it's much easier to do something online where if you don't like something, you can just, like, block the person and move on. And, like, a face-to-face interaction is harder because, like...
Or you send them death threats, right?
Or, yeah, you send them death threats. That's,
that's what people do nowadays, right?
That's a very normal thing. No, it's not. Legally speaking, it's not normal. But like, yeah, when you're face to face with somebody, because it's in our psychological makeup to like either be wary of like unsure situations. And when you kind of have like, you don't know which way to act in a situation, like you said, like, okay, so Peter is like a guy, he just wants to borrow some eggs. Okay. Totally normal request, like nothing wrong with that. And then he breaks them, and then you're kind of like,
well,
you feel like one or two hairs go up.
And then he breaks the phone.
And then he breaks
that's
the phone.
To me, that's no.
You're like, get out.
Fuck out.
Yeah. And it's
but
like,
also, like, it totally, hang on, sorry, Alex. It totally makes sense for, like, you know, the a space that a lot of women find themselves in, where it's like, when, you know, when, if she is ruder to him at first, like, he has the capacity to turn violent, and she doesn't know that. And so there's that sort of, like, extra layer where maybe if her whole family was there, they could have like ganged up on him, but it's like very obvious that they're like, they're separating people out. They're like separating the different members, weaker people from the herd. And like, it's harder for women to stand up to men because like, they do have the capacity to like, you know, there's evidence all over the place. They can turn violent, they can harm them. And it has happened for people like saying no or refusing something. So it's just like the calculus of like, what can I do to like have this interaction be over? So like, I can totally see like for her, the like level of where do I stop being polite is different than if, you know, Paul had asked George for the eggs, right? Cause George could be like, whatever, get the fuck out of here. And like, maybe the calculus is that Paul's like, I don't know if I can take George at one-on-one, but I definitely can take Anna. Like I can take her cause she's smaller than me. I can overpower her if I need to. And they know that, like, it's very clear that Peter and Paul both know how to have the upper hand in this situation because they kind of seem to be just working their way around that German lake, just like house after house. Yeah.
Do you think it's maybe a little bit also more because they're asking for eggs on the behalf of their neighbors? It wasn't just like, hey, I want some eggs. It's like, hey, we're staying with, you know, your neighbors who you're friends with and you know well, and... you know, they're cooking and they would like some eggs. So I felt like that added a little bit of extra, maybe societal pressure. It's like, oh, my neighbor's asking for the eggs. Like, of course, right? Like, they've already helped us move our boat down and we know them and our kid is definitely friends with their kid, you know?
It lowers their guard because they're like, oh, okay, you're using the names of people that we know. Like, so it's kind of like they're getting past all these sort of like, things that would raise red flags earlier so that you know, Anna and George are doubtful of the intentions because, you know, they don't want to assume somebody's going to be cruel and torture them to death. And these two people, Peter and Paul, are the type that are like, well, that's on them. They should have known that we would torture them to death. But again, it's kind of like, okay, so if she doesn't answer the door, it's just a screen door. They just break that down, and then it's like, you know, the idea that they wanted, that they would have, if she had been nicer to him, or she had just given the eggs, or she had just done X, Y, or Z, would have stopped it is like specious because no, they felt like you're targeted. We're gonna do whatever we can to take you down, and nothing you do is the right way. There's no right answer to give, so like, just give up. But also, we're playing a game.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was also interesting because, like, clearly George's first reaction, because he doesn't know any of the context of what happened when he first, and she's like, kick him out. And he's like, why? Right?
It's like, wow, that's weird.
Yeah. I think that harsh. That speaks to it, that time as well, where it's like, I just found George's instant reaction to his wife asking him to kick them out was not okay, but rather why, right? Like, what, like, did something happen, you know? And that maybe that's also, like, again, speaks to George not wanting to be rude either.
And it's like wanting to know all the pieces of a puzzle before making a decision, because, yeah, you don't want to make the wrong decision. But you'd hope that if it's in a situation where your partner is like, hey, get rid of them, I've said, please get rid of them, that should be enough for you. And he's like, well, let me try to figure this out a little bit more. It's just like, yeah, you got to trust those gut instincts, I think. But again, mm-hmm. I don't think it would have helped them. Like, I think much like the family in Hereditary, they were doomed from the start. You know, they were doomed from when they pulled into the gate and waved at the neighbors, and those two boys were over there playing golf with them. Like, it was like, you know, they're like, well, those are our next victims, and we're not going to stop until they're dead and we've won and we can move on to the ivy-covered house down the street. Like,
and that's funny games.
What a funny games. Those boys needed an after-school program. They needed a robust, caring adult to help socialize them. Learn some empathy.
They were doomed from the start.
Yeah. They were doomed from the start. What about Georgie?
He did his best to survive. Good try.
Good try, Georgie.
He pulled the trigger. What more can you do?
I think, again, the biggest thing I felt coming out of this movie is like, this is just another disappointing survival movie because of how many there was like a good 10-minute chunk where the two killers just left the room.
They just left. Yeah.
And yeah, the mom and dad are in intense grief because their child has just been murdered. But like, the adrenaline has to be in there still of like surviving this. Like, you need to get out of there and you need to find a weapon that you have on your person always. And you need to leave that house ASAP, and you need to hide in the woods, and you need to find a house that has a working phone, or you need to just like escape ASAP. And they spend 8, 9, 10 minutes just being like, oh, poor us.
The phone doesn't work.
I'm sad now. I got to change my clothes. Wah. It's like, okay. And it's like, again, I'm not blaming the victims. It's just, it takes me out of movies when it's so unbelievable the way that people respond to the situations around them. That is just, there's no fidelity there at all. So then it's like, okay, this is a contrivance, you know, there.
Yeah.
So I was just so disappointed with that scene that it kind of, it took me out of the movie and I could never quite get back in.
I will give that scene one props because yes, it was very long. And I was kind of like, you know what, if I was like fully in shock, I can see somebody like going catatonic the way she did. But I really did appreciate the physical feat of when they finally did stand George up, like, because he was lying on the ground, and then her like trying to stand him up, he's got like a bum arm and his leg is bleeding heavily, and just like the effort that went into getting him on his feet, I thought that was like, oh, that's like a good bit of physical acting. I really bought that. Like, that it would take that much time to move somebody with a broken leg in that way. Probably not the best choice. It probably could have been like, you know what? You stay there. I'll bring you the cell phone. See if it's dry. You just lay there. I'll go and we'll save 5 minutes. We'll have 5 more minutes to get away. But, you know, she's sticking by her man. So can't really blame her for that. But I really like that like physical feat of him standing up under her support and getting him into a chair. So I got to give them props for that.
It was good. It's not even the length of the scene that I found to be what was the worst part of it. I mean, it did drag a bit, but to me, it was just the lack of survival instinct was unbelievable.
Yeah, the whole scene where they're trying to get the phone working and they don't know what the emergency number is in Germany. I looked it up, by the way. They adopted a 110 emergency number in 1991. So this was 1997. Like, you have enough time to know what it is. But yeah. She spends so much time trying to get that goddamn cell phone working by drying out the battery, which is, it doesn't, if the phone is turning on, it's a signal issue. It's not a battery issue. So like,
it was 1997. Maybe they didn't know that.
They didn't know that. But like, I was just like screaming. I was like, I'm begging you, like, let him, Mr. like sits around, who's like, he's wounded, he can't run and get help, Leave him with the phone. Leave him to fucking fiddle with the phone, and you go. Like, Anna, go. Go, go, go. You need to be going right now. And so I think maybe that's what you're saying, Luke, about the survival instincts. Like, they're not using their resources. Anna is fully capable of moving and running and getting somewhere, and he's not, so let him do something that's stationary.
Yeah.
But he did get to have a little piece of bread. Nom, nom, nom. That was good. I also didn't understand how, like, you know, she sees a car coming down the road, and so she hides until it drives past, and it's a camper van, and then she runs out and tries to wave them down, and then she sees another car and doesn't hide, and I was like, there's no, like, we have had no indication of what vehicle the killers could be in, so why does she only think, like, the first car on this street has definitely got to be the killers, but the second car is probably safe? It's like, I would not be trusting anything. I'd try to get to a place where there's lots of people, not just, like, one or two.
You're playing the odds at that point, right?
No, this is, yeah, like, all of this is why I think the second half of this movie is a huge letdown.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the killers disappear for 10 minutes. We assume they're going to get food because there's, like, a running through line of them being like, oh, I'm getting kind of hungry. Like, we should get some food. And when they return, though, I really, really did enjoy the scene of, like, George hears something and then you hear a thunk and you just see the golf ball, like a golf ball rose into frame. They had set it up earlier with, like, him borrowing the golf ball, like, oh, can I please hit this golf ball? I really want to try out your driver. And he comes back holding the golf ball. So it's like, oh, obviously I didn't hit it, so I killed your dog with this golf club. But, like, when you just, like, see that same golf ball roll into frame, I was like, oh no, the killers are back. And, like, that kind of, like, activated a little pit in your stomach, and you felt the little dread build where it's like, okay, it's not going to be good for these people. It has never been good, but it's going to continue not being good for them.
Yeah, I kind of want to touch on, like, those typical slasher tropes that they the antithesis of the slasher genre. So I think, like, one of the things about slashers is there's supposed to be, like, a lot of deaths, a lot of, like, on-screen kills and stuff.
A lot of
and,
grisly murders, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I can't think of very many actual on-screen deaths that there were in this movie, and there weren't a ton, right? So we have, like, mm-hmm. I guess the three neighbors, like, the two neighbors and their daughter, which are probably yep. dead. We only see evidence that...
Sissy.
Yeah, the daughter's dead. And then Georgie dies very gruesomely, but it's off-screen, right? Like, you only mm-hmm. hear it happen. Yep. Dog dies, that's off-screen as well. But then you also...
But you do see it fall out of a car, which yeah. was very upsetting. Did yeah. not like that.
yeah. I don't think any real dogs were harmed in the making of this movie, though.
No. Definitely not.
And then for George, how does he die again? He gets stabbed?
He gets shot.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, like, you see that. And then for Anna's death, they throw her overboard, right? But, you, mm-hmm. like, it's implied that she dies because she's tied up and she's going to drown.
Up and she's...
Yeah.
Chucks her in a lake.
Yeah. So, like, really, there's not a whole ton of on-screen gruesome murders, right? So, mm-hmm. which is, like, not typical of what you would see in a slasher movie, right? Where it's, like, you'd see people getting harpooned through the chest or their head getting yeah. cut off, you know.
That's the whole point of every Friday the 13th movie is, like, exactly. watch this person get slashed up in yeah. a different way. Yeah.
And then another one was, the kind of idea that... one of the protagonists will survive, or, like, the final girl, right?
Yeah.
They all die, right? Nobody in the family survives. And then I think the point where Georgie gets shot off screen, I think there's like, a little bit of dialogue between the two where they're like, oh, you did it too early. Now the flow of the movie is mm-hmm. not going to be right, or something like that. So, yeah, that's, like, yeah. another kind of, like, where in a typical slasher movie, it's, like, you have to pace out your kills or something like that. And... that might be, like, not saying that it was a good thing, but that might be why the second part of the movie felt like it dragged on so long, because Georgie died too early. Do you know what I mean? Because
that was right? also a meta thing. Okay, I can
yeah, exactly.
respect that, like, a little bit, but yeah.
So, like, I didn't like it, but that's what the director was trying to do, I'm sure. And then, yeah. And then, like, we have, what's another kind of trope that I found? Oh, yeah, like, the knife on the boat becomes a red herring. you know,
the Chekhov's knife. Yeah, yeah, Chekhov's a little like, this will come back later.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like you see that she finds it, and she finds it, and she starts cutting, and you're like, oh, this is the time where she escapes. Like, nope, they like instantly took it from her. Right?
They're like, oh, you have a knife?
Yeah. Boop, so like all that thing, all like the kind of hope that you get that like the final girl will survive and has a fighting chance is like instantly taken away. Right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not even suspenseful at that point. Like, will she or won't she? It's like, she definitely won't.
She's not. She's done.
Yeah.
There's no saving this person.
Exactly. And then I think the final one that I thought was really interesting was kind of tying into that same final girl surviving thing is like that whole concept of the bet they had. It's like, oh, we bet you won't survive till, what was the time? Like 8 a.m. or?
9 a.m.
9 a.m.
They had 12 hours.
Yeah. We bet you won't survive for the 12 hours and make it to 9 a.m. And then when they're on the boat, he asks her the time. It's like, oh, it's like, it's 8. And they're like, oh, so there's still like an hour left. And like, if these antagonists are playing by the rules of their game, mm-hmm. as, you know, sadistic horror movie villains usually do, right? Like, they'll play by their rules and they'll respect their rules to an extent. Yeah. But it's like, no, he's like, you know what? I don't care. And they just chuck her overboard with an hour left, right, mm-hmm. of the bet. And it's like, that kind of also gets away from your typical, like, you know, there's the flow and pacing of the movie. And, you know, the funny games have rules. No, we'll just break the rules of our game, you know?
Yeah. So like, just because she's annoying him and can't sail as easily.
Yeah. Like, so like, sail. Exactly. So like in the whole of the movie, when you put in those kinds of like themes and tropes and like, flipping the genre on its head, and then the whole kind of meta commentary that he has by breaking the fourth wall and commentating on like, this is why we're doing this, is because you're watching it and you know, you're fucking up the flow of the movie and the pacing. Like, I can understand why the director did all that and like be like, mm-hmm. okay, I see what he's trying to do. And then, but then at the end of the day, it's just like, still didn't really like it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this could have been like a 12-minute video essay.
This could have been a YouTube short. But that, your point about the killing, I want to circle back on. You know, I liked all the stuff you said about the meta-ness of the narration and like their rules and following that and how they just like abandon it when it doesn't suit them anymore. But like, the only on-screen kill we do get to see doesn't even happen because of the big, I guess probably the biggest twist of this movie is
right,
that
yeah.
Peter has like rewind reality powers that he didn't know about, because Anna gets a hold of the shotgun, shoots Paul, kills him dead. We see him like fly black into the wall, a full shotgun blast, like blood splattered everywhere. And then he's able to grab the TV remote and rewind time so that it doesn't happen. And he's able to grab the shotgun. And I was just like, whoa, what? Like, I didn't see that coming. I guess they kind of laid the bait for that with him breaking the wall and talking to the audience. Like, you know, he's like, oh, we can't kill them now. We're not even at a full feature length time limit yet. So we can't do it yet. But then she like, I guess, doesn't follow the rules and he's able to change reality. So I wanted to know, like, how did you find that? Like, what did you think when you saw that? Or was that maybe spoiled for you? Or
well, when yeah. it happened, I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Click? And then,
yeah,
you know,
I wrote that too. I wrote a click yeah. reference.
But then, you know, that kind of once again ties into the whole like, oh, we're giving our, like, in a typical slasher horror movie, we're giving our protagonist a fighting chance and this is going to be the start of her escape. But mm-hmm. then, no, we're going to instantly erase that because that's what you are expecting. But this isn't your typical slasher horror movie, as the commentary suggests, mm-hmm. right? And it was, you know, at that point, because the movie had dragged on for so long and, like, I was getting a little already frustrated at that point. It became less of a cool, like, oh my god, like, this is what happened, to like, oh my god, I can't believe they did this. That's so stupid. Do you know what I mean?
Like, why? Don't make this movie longer. Don't rewind too far so we're back to the living room. Like, no.
Yeah. And I feel like this movie kept teasing, like, no, something's about to happen now. Something's about to happen now. Something's about to happen now. But it never does. And that's the point of this movie, where, you know, you think something's going to happen. But the point of the movie is, no, we're trying to make your typical, we're baiting you into thinking this is your typical movie, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And whether you like that or not,
push you in the like, yeah.
Yeah, whether you like that or not will probably determine whether you like this movie or not. Like, mm-hmm. do you like the commentary and the meta-ness of it enough to enjoy this movie? Chances are, like, for us, I can probably say, no, we didn't like the commentary out of it enough to like this movie. Whereas, if you look at Scream, like the first Scream, it's like, you know, we love the commentary of that and the way that they, you know, tried to, like, you know, not have your typical horror movie or, like, made it follow, like, the script of what we're expecting. And because that was a fun mm-hmm. movie and we enjoyed watching it and it was funny and it was interesting and it was like a good whodunit. Whereas this one is just like kind of pointless.
Well, they did it. We right? know who's doing it.
It's exactly. Them. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Like this was a very pointless movie to try to make a point about the slasher genre.
Yeah. And they kind of did that like at the end when they're on the lake and they're sailing around. They're just like chatting shit about some like sci-fi multiverse movie where it's like, well, if you put this isn't if you're watching something on a film, it's just as real to the people in the film as reality is to you, so the films are reality and blah blah blah. And I was just like, okay,
it's some real film nerd shit, you know, and like I'll respect it for what it tries to do, but this film was not entertaining. And the point of me watching movies is I'd like to think about, you know, how like, you know, how movies relate to, you know, the human condition and all that stuff mm-hmm. and like commentary on society and like that stuff is cool, but the biggest reason I watch movies is to be entertained, and this movie didn't hit that part, you know?
So you actually can answer the question from Gladiator. You were not entertained.
I was not entertained.
Yeah.
I just
Luke, what did you think of the reality bending?
Yeah. Too little, too late.
Okay, next.
It was...
Would you have liked to see more of it?
Well, like... I just thought it was sad that Anna didn't know she was in a movie. Because if she had known she was in a movie, she could have rewound it all the way to before the guys came and then could have just preemptively killed them.
Or when Georgie got shot, she would have been like, cut, cut.
Yeah, and then... And
yeah,
then
cut. Turn it off.
You go back to the beginning of the movie, you kill those two, and then you break the remote. Easy.
You break the remote, yeah. and you have steak with your friends, and it's great.
I just thought it was unfair. Why does Peter and Paul know they're in a movie, but the family doesn't? It's unfair.
It's true.
You know,
it's unfair.
I feel like
very fair-minded.
Peter didn't even know he was in a movie. It was really just Paul, right?
Peter was the henchman guy.
Okay. Peter didn't
Paul
know
knew
much
he
at
was
all.
In a movie, but maybe not Peter.
Yeah, he was just like an unfortunate lackey, or I guess like yeah, yeah. I will say I watched some side-by-side clips just in case you had watched the 2007 one. Like, after we finished it, I was like, let me just watch it. And there's comparisons. And I think one of the biggest letdowns in the 2007 one is both of the bad guys are, like, blonde and they have the same haircut. Mm. And I was like, I would have not been able to tell these two people apart. So I was really glad that the German one, it's like, they're very different looking people. So you always know who's who.
Amen.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, nothing about the rewind. Would you have liked to see more things about it, him having this power before, or
I don't, do you think that would have made it better? It was certainly the moment where I realized that this wasn't a movie that was even trying to have a plot. So I just was like, okay, this is entirely a metacog cogitation on us, the audience, watching a movie, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's not a good enough movie for me to think that was a worthwhile attempt, mm-hmm. I guess.
Okay.
Make a better movie if you're going to make it about me watching the movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, otherwise you're like, oh, fair enough. Guess what? Movies aren't real, and you watch them, and you're, like, kind of involved in this sort of fantasy. And I'm like, yeah, and I also did pass grade 2, and I already know that. Like, I feel a certain form of embarrassment when... somebody in my life sincerely comes up with a thought or idea that is something I've known or like what I consider to be common knowledge. Because you feel like it's a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, I did an Indigenous awareness training with City of Nelson staff who are like kind of flabbergasted at the horror of the residential schools in Canada and stuff like that. And they're all like, these are people in their like late 40s, 50s, and 60s who are like spreading the good word to everyone who will listen about the horrors of Canadian past. And it's similar. It's a similar feeling to me about like if someone came up to me today and like very sincerely and excitedly explained the glory of this new social media platform called Facebook. Have you heard of Facebook? Do you know that you can talk to your friends? You're just like, yeah, you're like 20 years too late to this party, you fucking idiot.
Where did you come from?
So yeah. It's like, it's when people who have like a little bit of power or prestige get, so they get to control the room and they are saying things that are so much dumber than where you're at. It's just, so it's like, okay, all right, yeah. I'm an audience member watching a movie. What do you know? And maybe this is an insight in 1997, but sure as shit isn't now.
That's true. And like, that's not to say that it's like, it's bad for people to learn things when they learn things, because everyone comes to knowledge when they come to it and you can't really control that. But yeah, it really rubs me the wrong way when somebody learns something or they come to a piece of information and then they think they're the first person to learn mm-hmm. that. Like when I learn something that's new, that should have been new for me, that should have been common knowledge, I'm like, oh, I feel like I should have known this before. Yeah, I feel like I
and you have a humility
let
about
down
it.
The world. Yeah, but when somebody's like, hey, did you know that you can cook bacon in the oven? And you're like, yeah, you're not the first person to do that. You know,
yeah, but did you
like,
know you can cook bacon in the microwave?
You should.
And then that person starts telling you how to cook bacon in the oven, what's the best way, how they do it, and how the way that they do it is the best way.
Right? You're like, actually, this is the way I do it. I discovered it. It's like, yeah. Yeah, also, like, you can cook with fire. Like, where are you? Like, why are you just getting to this party late? And maybe that's, like, sort of how some people feel with our earlier episodes of horror movies, where like, boy, what do we think about this movie, The Exorcist? Oh, I don't know. Like, and everyone's like, yeah, this movie's been out for 50 years. Like, what are you talking about?
But, yeah.
You know, maybe that's on us. But like, I get what your point is. It's like, yes, I understand film theory. I'm an audience member. You don't have to be like, so you like it, so it's your fault that I'm killing these people. It's like, no, it's not.
No.
It's not my fault. It's the director's fault. He made you say these lines and do these things.
Yeah. Yeah. This is definitely a movie that I don't think has aged well at all, just because, you know, people are a little bit more savvy about movies now than they were.
And if you look at, like, oh, sorry, finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you look at the IMDb and the ratings for this movie, like, in 1997, and the ratings on it, this movie is, like, much more favorably reviewed. I looked at some of the reviews from the time. People are like, whoa, this is kind of revolutionary. They remade it for American audiences with Naomi Watts and Tim Roth 10 years later.
What a fucking like, cast though, huh?
Well, it's stacked, but it's like 20 points lower. Like it's 20% less favorably regarded. Like, and I don't know if that's just because they're like, why did you remake this? Nobody needs to, or like we're 10 years past like this being a revelation. Maybe this is boring. You know, I don't know. Correlation does not equal causation, but it does feel like it has moved. Like even 10 years after it came out, people are already like, yeah, we know mm-hmm. we're audiences. We're not participants. So. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. Do we have final thoughts?
Not really.
No, I thought quite a bit about this movie.
Let's head through. The movie ends. They go to the next house. They ask for more eggs and we assume it all starts again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, my question is, can he do that with any TV remote? Like, what happens if the plan doesn't go well at Gerda's house or whatever? Like, is that remote going to work? Because it didn't seem like he had a special click remote. He just could use anything, I guess. Do we have a scariest part of the movie then? Alex, scariest part?
Probably the game they were playing to try and make a point about how Anna doesn't have any flab. And then they put the pillowcase on Georgie's head. So, like, it's like, don't worry, your kid won't see, but you got to do this. Or, like, do you want Georgie? Like, it was just, like, very sadistic, very psychotic, and, like, probably very unnecessary. But, it that scene made me very uncomfortable.
A fun game called Kitten in a Sack. Mm-hmm. Okay. These guys are psychopaths. Luke, your scariest part?
There were no scary parts of this movie, but the one part where I found myself even mildly titillated in the exchange is the beginning between Anna and I guess Tom/Fatty when he first shows up, where it's like, okay, the uncertainty is happening here. And I was like, yeah, this is a kind of not if not tense, tense adjacent for what's going to happen.
Yeah. And you kind of get like even a seed planted before that when they pull up at the gate and they're waving to their like neighbors and they're like, ah, see you at 10 a.m. for golf tomorrow. And they're like, yes, yes, it will be fun. And they're like, boy, that was weird. Why were they being so weird? Like, you know, but yeah, that's a good point. My scariest part is when that golf ball came rolling back across the frame. I was just like, oh, boy,
they're back.
You know, it's funny game over. It's funny game's over.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was going to be bad and over. All right. So I don't know if, Alex, if Danae gave you something to rate it out of, but what should we rate this one out of? And what is your rating?
I think we will rate it out of what I assumed was the fact is a number of raw meat consumptions. Didn't he go to the kitchen, came back with like the slab of like raw sausage and was just eating it on the couch?
So I would agree with you if I was not German myself, but boy oh boy, do they love a processed meat. I think the steak was one thing, but I think he was just eating like cured sausage, like German sausage.
Okay.
So yeah. But yeah, there was a lot of like the Germans, they love their little sliced meats.
Mm.
Tell you how much I had that for lunch with my Omi growing up. Just a bunch of cheese and bread. Oh,
I love liverwurst.
Oh, it's so good. Okay, so number of meat consumptions.
Number of meat consumptions. I'll go first. I think pretty evident I didn't really find too much enjoyment in this movie. Like, there are the minor bits of commentary that I was like, okay, that's interesting enough, but the interest of that did not exceed the entertainment of this movie, and I wasn't very entertained for most of it, so I'm going to give this a 2 meat consumptions out of 5.
2 out of 5. All right. I think that like click scene where they rewind reality actually like it surprised me enough to bump it up a little bit more, but this movie was grim and dour and a bummer, and like you kind of know that going in where you're like, it says funny games, but I bet you it's going to be the opposite of that. And so I'm going to give this a 2.9 meat consumptions out of 5. It's a real bummer.
This movie had a handful of things that I thought were interesting, but it wasn't enough to overcome the unnecessarily long runtime and the pretty bland message in the end for my taste. So 1.5.
1.5 out of 5. Well, there you go. That's Funny Games. You can check it out on YouTube if you want. That's the only place I found to watch it. But let's cheer something. Let's finish off with something to cheer. And we'll throw it back to you, Alex. What are you cheering this month?
My cheer, I guess I'm going back to Vancouver for another show on Wednesday.
It's not on Lynx or not.
No, I'm going with Flair this time. Fingers crossed. it's going to be a fucking banger lineup, and I'm really excited. It's Saturdays at Your Place, Ben Quad, Carly Cosgrove, and Arms Length. So fucking
wow.
Really excited for that. Banger show incoming. That's my cheer.
Awesome. That's a good show. I myself am going to cheer that by the time this comes out, I'll be done school, and hopefully I will have been able to see the upcoming, at the time of recording, total eclipse of the sun, not of my heart, total eclipse of the sun passing over Montreal and most of the eastern seaboard, I think, at the first week of April. Amy is coming out. We're going to hopefully find clear skies to watch the eclipse and take some pictures of it and have a good old time, because it's, you know, the next time a total solar eclipse will happen in this region will be in 345 years, and I don't think I'll make it.
April 10th or 8th?
It's the 8th.
8th, okay.
It's on Monday. It's on Monday the 8th. So I guess I'm currently wishing for clear skies, and when you hear this, you'll can retroactively wish for me to have had clear skies.
Well,
so we'll see.
I think, you know, there's a chance 345 years that your consciousness will be uploaded thanks to Elon Musk or something like that.
Or maybe you can be like God Emperor of Dune and become a sandworm.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Is that how Dune 2 ends? I don't remember. I didn't see the last half.
No,
of that movie.
It doesn't happen. But
that
movie. It's like a 3,000 year reign, right?
That's true. Yeah, one of them becomes a sandworm, doesn't
3,000 year reign? Talk about not a desert planet anymore. All right.
Oh, baby. What are you cheering, Luke?
I have a combo cheer as we speak. Joelle and Chip are driving to Nelson from Calgary, my sister and brother-in-law. And so they're going to be visiting for a little while. So I'm excited to see them. And they're going to arrive just in time for trivia, which is also today.
Oh, party.
And I'm cheering last week's trivia. We set a record at the bar. We got 60 out of 61 in the trivia, correct?
Hell yeah.
And
what was the incorrect one?
This is the funniest part. The question we got wrong was the very last question of the quiz. So we were 60 out of 60, one last question. And it was the music round, and you had to name the title of the song. And it was a Johnny Cash song that no one on our team knew. It wasn't like one of the famous ones. So we missed it by 1 point, and it was a Johnny Cash song. But it was we got an ovation by all the other teams. When the host read out our score, all the other teams actually just like gave us kudos because it was a ridiculously good score. And we were like, wow. Yeah, it felt great.
Good. Nice.
That's awesome.
Congratulations.
Hell yeah. 60 out of 61. That's fucking great.
It was awesome, yeah.
Also, I feel like it's better, like, psychologically to, like, lose on a question you didn't know rather than lose on a question you, like, you should have known.
Oh,
like,
for
if they
sure.
were like, and here's question,
for sure.
here's question 61, name Luke Skywalker's home planet. And you're like, Naboo?
Jedha.
Wrong.
Jedha. Like,
he's a Jedi, yeah. So it's gotta be Jedha.
Jedha, right. It's gotta be Jedha. I'm confirmed, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, congrats to the highest scoring team in Nelson trivia history.
At Backroads.
I'll say that. Backroads. Backroads, Nelson.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do us for the week. Thank you for listening to the show. You can follow us on social medias, but I'm not really on there anymore. And I know Alex isn't doing one song a day anymore. So thanks for listening. If you are listening, we love to hear from you. Luke, would you like to plug anything? You got other stuff going on. What's up? What's happening for you?
Really True Fiction, Liberal Soul. Listen if you want. It's fine.
Listen if you want. That's the strongest indictment there is.
Yep.
Is that the right word? Indictment? No.
Good enough.
Endorsement. That's the one I was looking for.
Listen or don't. It's
all fine. Right, folks. Listen or don't. Live your life. We only have one go around on this wonderful earth. Anyway, just remember, folks, we'll see you next month. And they're just movies. There's nothing to fear.